So, who is Queen Kunti? Queen Kunti who is the father? Queen Kunti and Vasudeva are brother and sister. So who is the father?
Surasena.
So when Kunti was very young, her father, Surasena, had a friend. And the friend was Kunti Bhoja. Kunti Bhoja and his queen were unable to conceive children, so very kindly, like brotherly-like affection, Surasena put his daughter Kunti in charge under the care of Kunti Bhoja. So her previous name, which is sometimes addressed in Bhagavad Gita as Pritha, O son of Pritha, that's from her father Surasena gave her the name Pritha. But as time passed, she took on a nickname or a second name, and as the daughter of Kunti Bhoja, she became Kunti. And when she was young, very, very gifted, of course, we'll say, you know, these are opulences of a pure devotee. She was very gifted with character, very gifted with beauty. She was renowned for being the fulfiller of Dharma. And in her young age, as a young girl, one time, Durvasa Muni came to visit the kingdom, Kunti Bhoja. And everyone panicked. Look out, here comes Durvasa Muni. But Kunti was not intimidated. She was very happy to serve an exalted great sage and brahmana, Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni was so pleased with her loving service. Durvasa Muni is a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And one of Shiva's names is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who is easily pleased, one who is easily angered. Easily pleased, easily angered. Don't anger Durvasa Muni, you're in trouble. But you please Durvasa Muni, and it's very special. So she served him so nicely that he wanted to give her benediction. Very unusual benediction was given. He knew, because he was a great sage, that she would have difficulty in her married life of having children with her husband. So he gave her a benediction that here's a very sacred mantra, very special mantra, and you chant this mantra and you can call any one of the demigods and they will produce a child. See you later, Kunti. Kunti's little girl, very curious about this mantra. So she tried it out. And there's that very famous painting. In fact, it's hanging, the original is huge painting, it's hanging in the Chicago temple, where Kunti is in the palace of Kunti Bhoja. And she calls the sun god. There's the sun god, here on the veranda. Brilliant as the sun. And Vivaswan says, you called me there. And she said, well, thanks a lot, no thanks. And a little discussion, and he explained to her that she would be able to conceive a child without losing her virginity. And then Kunti said, well, I can't walk around being pregnant for a month. I'm not married. He said, don't worry, the child was born right away. You know, this and that. And so she agreed, and Carmen was born. And Kunti was thinking, what am I going to do? There's a little baby and not a married woman. How can I tell them? Well, the sun, the Durvasa Muni in mantra, people think I'm lying. Who's going to believe this? Although the bodily markings on Karna's body indicated he was born with armor on his body. Chakriya. So she didn't know what to do. She prayed and prayed and finally decided that the sun god, the father of the child, would protect the child. So she went to the Ganga and put the child in a little floating apparatus and prayed to the sun god, please take care of your child. So downstream, the child was found, and the child was then raised by a Shudra couple, forest-dwelling couple. So Karna was considered like that, although his birth was most noble. This became, this is one of the puzzlements of Mahabharata and Kunti's life, the tragedy of Karna. But that was her first child, Karna. Then Kunti, during her Swayambhar ceremony, her father, Kunti Bhoja, gave her that privilege to select her husband. And many great kings came. She selected Pandu, so she became the wife of Pandu. Later, Pandu accepted a second wife, Madri, and so the two, Madri and Kunti, became the queens of the emperor world. And as fate would have it, Pandu, having a special mantra to fire an arrow where he could hit the target without even seeing the target, he went in at night when the sun had gone down, hunting, and he heard a sound like an animal drinking water in the river. So he fired an arrow and heard a human voice call out, ah! And he went to the place and saw a young boy with an arrow in his chest. Long, long hard stories are always here. So the boy keep as many details as keep it short. The boy said, I am the son of a blind, elderly mother and father. I was here gathering water. My blind mother and father, they're expecting water. They're completely helpless. Two things, pull the arrow out of my chest, you'll die. But the pain is too much, and I won't survive anyway, so pull the arrow out. And go tell my mother and father what has happened. So he went and told the mother and father. The mother and father said two things. Take us to where our son is so we can perform his funeral. And then we can enter into the fire because we can't maintain ourselves without him. And the second is, you will, not exactly a curse, but as this has happened to us, it will happen to you. You will also die. As whenever there is union between yourself and female. Pandu did all those things. They entered into the fire. He went back and told his queens, I made this big offense and I decided I want to purify myself and leaving the kingdom, going into the forest and undergo austerities and try to purify myself. So the queen said, we're going with you. So they went with him. And in course of time, without the details, 5 sons were born with the use of the mantra. So, one by one, then the twins, Nakula and Sahadeva, were born as the sons of Madri, fathered by the Ashwini Kumaras, and Pandu died. So there's Kunti alone, with 5 strapping young boys. She sought the advice of the Asadei and the sages, and they all said she should at once go back to the royal palace. And rather than the whole history, here she is, where the Kauravas were in enmity against her sons, because they wanted the kingdom. Dhritarashtra wanted his sons to be king, but it was not rightful according to Dharma, the firstborn son. That was Yudhisthira. Actually, it was Karna, but Yudhisthira, the firstborn son of Pandu, should be the king. So, intrigue, and the result was the Kurukshetra battle. And after the battle, Yudhisthira became the king. And when the rightful religious king was in place, Krishna, who had come to Hastinapur, was now returning back to Dwarka. This is the scene of where the prayers begin. So as Krishna is about to get on his chariot, here the painting shows he's actually on the chariot, Kunti, because she's the queen, she has royal privileges, she went right through this big, huge crowd of people and right into the assembly, through the assembly, right up to the chariot of Krishna, and offers these wonderful prayers. So that's the background. Now, the prayers of Queen Kunti begin with text 18, and I'm just going to do this little summary of Kunti's prayers, those particular few. Let us begin by saying this prayer together to Krishna. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate. My dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So now the themes in this section of prayers go like this. There's, as appropriate for a pure devotee, this extreme humility that she expresses, berating herself as unqualified in so many ways, but that's her qualification, it's her humility. She discusses in her own way, not by scholarship, but by her own devotion, the distinction between bhakti and Gyan, and she revels in the inconceivable nature of Krishna, the great mystery. She finds Krishna's position is very mysterious, and in different ways describes that, his inconceivable mysterious pastimes, specifically his pastimes, and demonstrating his position, because he's covered, people cannot see because he's covered by a curtain of Maya. And another important theme is Krishna protects those who take full shelter of him. And a big message throughout all of these prayers is the inconceivableness or the contradictory feature of Krishna. So non-devotees can't understand. It comes back to this at the top, bhakti versus jnana. By knowledge or by speculative understanding, Krishna cannot be understood. He remains a mystery. One looks at him and she points it out. While he's giving protection, for example, he gives protection to those who take shelter of him, but he's equal to everybody. So it looks like he's unequal while he's equal to everybody. Or I'll point it out as we go along, that he's inside of everything and outside of everything, yet he cannot be seen by anybody. He's everywhere. Inside and outside of everything, no one can see him. Contradictory. And so forth, you'll see. This is a theme. So that's the themes. And now we'll begin with text 18. Because of time, I'm not going to say the Sanskrit, we'll just read the translation. Srimati Kunti said, "Oh Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of material nature. You existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all." Contradiction. Apparent. You're existing both within and without everything, yet you're invisible. And another contradiction, if you consider it carefully, he's the original personality, he's the source of everything, but he's unaffected by that which he is the source of. So in one sense that makes sense. But he stands alone. He's not one of us. She knows that. Now Krishna is her brother's son. But you're not one of us. And she knows that. Later she's going to say, "I don't understand you." She understands him. But she's saying, "I don't understand you." And we'll explore that. There's lots of apparent contradictions in all of this. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's translation of the same verse. "I offer my respects unto you, the Supreme Person, the original one, the controller, beyond the control of property, unseen by material senses, and existing inside and outside of all living beings." Again, I'm just doing the summary here, not going into depth of any of these. Here's how he presents his commentary, Vishwanath. Understanding everything that Krishna has had and done recently, Kunti was unable to tolerate the agitation caused by the great respect that arose in her heart. Thus she began praising Krishna. So he's saying the place in Kunti's heart, she's revealing her heart. It's very similar to the gopis when Krishna was leaving, because they were shy. So they didn't disclose their feelings toward Krishna when Krishna was leaving. They abandoned that shyness and they said so many things and behaved in so many ways. It was very clear what was in their hearts. Kunti is doing the same. This is Kunti's heart. Everything that Krishna has done, thing after thing after thing, so amazing that she was feeling reverence, great respect. Wasn't like Braja Prema. This is more like Dwarka Prema or Mathura Prema. It's the intimacy is less, but so there's an enormous amount of reverential devotion that she's feeling. And so she's praising Krishna in that way. And as Krishna hears Kunti's praises of him, starting with this verse, here's how Vishwanath, I like his commentary, his way of commenting. So he's taking word by word. Krishna's response, "You're praising me, but I'm your nephew. Why are you offering respects to me? You're my superior, offering respects to me." So Kunti said, "But you're the Supreme Lord." She understood it that way. From the Sanskrit of the verse Purusham, Krishna's reply, "Of course I'm not a Purusha, a man." Another meaning of the word Purusha. There's no doubt about that. And Kunti says, "Yes, but you're the first Purusha, Adhyam Purusha." And Krishna's response, "Well, all bodies come and go, but all souls are Adhyam, original." Kunti is saying, "But you are the Supreme, Ishvara." And Krishna replies, "Well, in Swarga, where we are, yeah, in Swarga, Indra and the moon god, they're Ishvaras, and on earth, the kings are controllers. You're calling me Ishvara. But you're superior to property. Those are persons who are with material bodies and they're influenced by property. So, if you say I'm Purusha, does that mean I'm the Purusha within? Paramatma?" And Kunti's reply is, "No, because you are imperceptible, alaksham. The Paramatma is subject to revelation by use of intelligence and other means." Got it? Yogis, or those that are refined in discriminatory power. There's a verse in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, one can understand Krishna by use of the intelligence, at least conceptually. So Paramatma is perceivable by use of the intelligence and other means. Then Krishna says, "Well, am I the imperceptible Brahman?" And Kunti's reply is, "No. You are situated internally and externally." It's his way of taking the words of Kunti's prayers and making a play on them. Apparently contradictory, but she's clear. But she's pointing out there are these apparent contradictions. You're existing both within and without and everything, but no one can see you, alaksham. Now she's seeing him, that you're going to hear. "I'm seeing you, but I'm not seeing you." Another contradiction. The explanation given why Krishna can't be seen, although he is within everything and outside of everything, is his yogamaya potency. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, "Yogamaya samavata nanam prakasha sarvasya." Yogamaya samavata. Krishna is covered by the curtain of yogamaya, when you hear this word, curtain, used again. And so ordinary people can't understand him. Now Kunti's not an ordinary person, but she's referring to others in this first verse, but in the moment she's going to refer to herself. We'll see, it's subtle, it's very sweet. Kunti's position is she's disclosing her heart. So persons can't understand Krishna because of that yogamaya potency. But when they engage in devotional service, then they're in the internal potency instead of the external potency. And then Krishna becomes revealed. Of course, this is Krishna in his feature of Vrindavan, playing upon his flute. Then bring this flute food to Hastinapur or wherever. But she understands to some degree about Krishna and Vrindavan, although she finds that pretty mysterious also. Whoops. Here's the next verse. Text 19, number 1-24. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So she's going further into the inconceivableness or the imperceptibleness of Krishna. How is it that he's imperceivable? Well, he's beyond the range of sense perception. But Hoksaja, that's the name that she's addressing him by in this verse. And he's likened to an actor that's performing in a drama, and the person in the audience seeing the actor doesn't recognize who the actor is. They only see the costume or the portrayal of who the actor looks like, but they don't even know who that person is. Something similar like this happens in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. When Sachi Devi, the mother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was seated in the audience watching the drama that was arranged by her son, when she saw different actors on the stage, she asked the person next to me, "Who's that?" And then when she realized who that was, she fainted. By yoga mind potency, even mothers may not recognize their son. And then one other important word in this is irreproachable. So that's not a word that we normally use in conversation, irreproachable. So irreproachable means there's no fault. There's nothing wrong. There's no discrepancy. Although it may appear that there's a discrepancy, Krishna is irreproachable. When he covers himself so people can't see him and understand him, he's not to be reproached or faulted. Or anything that he does in his pastimes, because people fault Krishna in his pastimes. Why did he do this? Why did he do that? Why didn't he do this? And so forth. They fault Rama, they fault Krishna, because he's here, but he's irreproachable.
There are the three modes by which Maya acts.
different modes act in different ways, but the net result is the same, but it's diluted. And I thought to embellish just this little bit, watch the screen because it moves. The classic example of Maya is mistaking something for what it's not. So there's a rope that looks like a snake. But there are two things. There's a snake and there's a rope. It's the classic Vedic example of defining what is Maya. Rope appears to be a snake, and then you feel some feelings of fear when you see the snake, but it's not a snake, it's a rope. Maya allows us to not see the real thing and see something else instead of the real thing. And then we have some feelings, we have a bite centered around what is it? That's literally what Maya means, not this. We accept not this to be this to be not this. That's the feature of Maya. And with Krishna, it works just the opposite. This is a nice painting of the Katyayani Vrata, where the gopis are worshipping the goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. And there's a very nice painting, same pastime. Krishna appears in the Kadamba tree to take the position of their husband or perform a leela where he commits that I will become your husband one day. The verse that's specific to this point is chapter 22, text 4. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra, O Goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj a husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. So, interestingly, all of them were offering the same prayer. And none of them were envious of the other one. That doesn't happen in this world. That happens in this world. There are enviousness towards different girls who have, attraction to the same boy. That they become competitive and envious towards one another. But that's not so in Vrindavan. They're not envious of one another. They're all have the same aspiration. They're all together doing the same worship of Katyayani for the same purpose, to have Krishna as her husband. Now, Katyayani is the name of Durga, as you see from the painting. There she is, riding a lion with four arms. So why are the girls in Vrindavan worshipping a demigod, Katyayani? Well, the answer is they're not. And here's Prabhupada's purport, where it explains, according, I'm going to read the whole thing, it's very nice, very important, in the whole of Kunti's prayers, and the whole of Krishna consciousness for that matter. According to various acharyas, the goddess Durga, mentioned in this verse, is not the illusory energy of Krishna called Maya, but rather the internal potency of the Lord, known as Yoga Maya. The distinction between the internal and external, or illusory potency of the Lord, is described in the Narada Pancharatra, in the conversation between Shruti and Vidya. The Narada Pancharatra is our guidebook for deity worship. That's one of the things that it is. So in that Narada Pancharatra, it's a Vaishnava explanation, and it's pretty authoritative. It's discussion between Shruti, that's the Vedas, and Vidya, very elevated sources. And the translation goes like this. The Lord's inferior potency, known as Durga, is dedicated to his loving service. Being the Lord's potency, the inferior energy is none different from him. There is another superior potency whose form is on the same spiritual level as that of God himself. Simply by scientifically understanding this supreme potency, one can immediately achieve the supreme soul of all souls, who is the Lord of all lords. That means they were worshiping the internal potency, Kadhyayani, not the external potency, Durga. That's the meaning. There is no other process to achieve him. That supreme potency of the Lord is known as Gokuleshwari, the goddess of Gokula. Her nature is to be completely absorbed in love of God, and through her one can easily obtain the primeval God, the Lord of all that be. The internal potency of the Lord has a covering of the potency known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within the universe falsely identifies himself with the material body. Nice, huh? Very tight explanation of a very elaborate subject matter. They were worshipping the internal potency, Kadhyayani, or Gokuleshwari, or Yogamaya, so that through their agency and their agency alone can one get Krishna. That's what they wanted. So they were worshipping, although they're very simple girls, they're worshipping the internal potency, but not, very important, not separate from Krishna, but in relation to Krishna. We don't worship Lakshmi without Narayana. We don't worship Radharani without Krishna. We don't worship Sita without Ram. We can't even think of them as separate. Hanuman says it's impossible for them to be separate. You can't even think of it. But those who think of it, they're not worshipping the internal potency, Lakshmi or Radharani or Sita, as the Mahamaya feature. The persons don't know Krishna because of that Mahamaya feature. And those that want to know Krishna must approach Krishna through his internal potency. So, Kunti knows that. She's most highly educated and most highly refined and most highly realized, but she's portraying herself as one who's not. That's her humility. Again and again and again and again. She's very consistent in her humility. Not sometimes. And this internal potency is manifested in Vrindavan as the gopi, but each of them are, the gopis are expansions of Srimati Radharani. And simply to enhance the happiness of Radha and Krishna. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's rendering of the verse. I do not know you, covered by the screen of Maya, beyond the knowledge of the material senses, and unaffected, just as the puppeteer behind the screen moving the puppets is not understood by the eyes of the ignorant. No, she knows all this, but she's portraying herself as one that doesn't know all this. That's her humility.
Me first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. There we go. Okay, sorry about that. There's a puppet. And the puppet is a man playing violin. So somebody in the audience that doesn't see the puppet strings may think the puppet is playing the violin. But the puppeteers are really expert. They can not only have the puppet move, but they can have the puppet play a violin. You can hear the violin playing. And simple people in the audience think, oh, the puppet's playing violin, or that wooden person over there, he's playing violin. Isn't that good? But a learned person will know it's the puppeteers that are causing the puppet to play the violin. Got it? I hope it's clear. So when we see things in life, it looks like somebody's doing something. But behind that somebody doing something, there's somebody that's controlling that somebody that's doing something. So not seeing Krishna is the influence of Mahamaya, the deluding potency. So it's likened to a screen. There, and behind the screen, there's puppeteers, and in front of the screen, there's puppets. Yes? Kunti has that realization. She's saying, this is Vishwanath saying, I don't know you because I'm covered by Maya. You are beyond the material senses. On the other, you're on the other side of the screen. I can only see the screen and what's on the other side of the screen. She can see because of her quality of devotion. Okay, now here's his commentary. Sorry about that. Since internally you protect the child in the womb of Uttara, and externally you protect us by being near us, should I understand that you are all pervading? See the play going back to the first one? You're inside everything, outside of everything. But no one can see you. So am I the all-pervading Brahman? Is that what's to be understood? No. He's a person. She's not a philosopher, but she's a philosopher. She's not a highly learned person, but she's a highly learned person. Because knowledge has been awakened in her heart through bhakti. So she knows things that persons that are scholarly and philosophers can't understand. They see contradictions only. But she understands through bhakti, just like the discussion yesterday evening. Through devotional service causes the detachment of knowledge awakened. She's got it. But she's portraying herself as one who doesn't get it. I'm bewildered. So here's a little image of, we're going to hear this later in these first sets of prayers, where Krishna protected Maharaj Prakshit within the womb of Uttara. So that's inside. Then outside, Krishna's giving protection to the Pandavas and to Kunti. So I don't see you because you're covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya. So, Krishna's reply, Vishnu says, oh, then Maya covers me? Am I covered by Maya? And of course the answer is no. It is like the fool who thinks that the sun is covered by a cloud. I see you as covered because my vision is covered by Maya. Because you are beyond sense knowledge. But hoksajam, sense knowledge, akshajam, jnanam, is situated below you. Adha. I do not have the power to contact you. Since my knowledge arises from my senses, like the knowledge of a fool. No, again, this is her humility. She understands perfectly well, but she's portraying herself as a fool. That I only know those things that can be knowable through my senses, but she knows things that are beyond the senses. This is Kunti. This is part of Kunti's exaltedness. The example is given by Vishwanatha of the moon, full moon, on a cloudy night. So you can't see. You can see the moon is there, But you can't see the fullness of the moon because it looks like the moon is covered by clouds, but the moon is not covered by clouds. So this is another, for me, this is a big puzzle of how Kunti gets away with criticizing herself like this. Vishwanath presents, Krishna says to Kunti, but you see me directly and you praise me. You know that I am beyond prakriti. Then why do you criticize yourself as being ignorant? You ever wondered that question? How does, why is Kunti speaking like this? Vishwanath says, beautiful. Though the dancer is endowed with rhythms and dance steps suitable for the rasa, the ignorant spectator, ignorant of the scriptures delineating performance, sees only a dancer dancing. Though he sees, he does not really see. Similarly, though I see you, I really do not see you. The word tata, or similarly, should be understood from the context. Though you protect the pandavas, your devotees, since you are the soul within us, all of us, constantly, you personally counteract the weapon of Ashwatthama meant for killing the pandavas. Though you promised not to use weapons, you took up a weapon. Though you protect the righteous, you had Bhishma and other righteous persons destroyed. Though you are most affectionate to Draupadi and Subhadra, you let their sons be killed. I do not know the truth about your pastimes. I see you, but I don't see you. I don't understand you. You're filled with contradictions. And keeps going on. More contradictions. Again, back to the theme. He's inconceivable. Whoops. Have to fix that. In him, all contradictory qualities are reconciled. He can't be seen, but Kunti understands this. He's filled with these apparent contradictions, but it's all reconciled in his nature. A theme, again, through her prayers. And she's disclosing from her heart the truths about Krishna that only qualified devotees like her can understand. Next verse, text 20. Oops. There we go. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Now this is again one of the themes. Gyan versus Bhakti. Or Bhakti versus Gyan. She's not a Gyani. I don't have the credential of a Gyani. You, Krishna, have come to propagate the science of devotional service to the Gyanis and the transcendentalists aspiring to understand you, and they become qualified in a certain way, being able to discriminate between matter and spirit, and they can't understand you, so how can I understand you? So she's gesturing by her words to the saving people who are pursuing the absolute truth, great sages and powerful personalities of so many descriptions, so many different manifestations throughout the history of mankind, searching for God. And here's a person from India who are known for that, or dedicated in that way, and they become purified by sense control and mind control and strengthening your intelligence and studying the scripture, trying to understand matter and spirit. Samkhya philosophy, Samkhya yoga, they're very qualified in that way. So she's saying, How can we women hope to see you? The object of bhakti for the omniscient, liberated sages. That's her message. Vishwanath's commentary. I'm hopeless as a woman. Can even the omniscient sages, Paramahamsas, worship you with attraction for your sweet pastimes, being ignorant of the truth about your pastimes, know the intricacies of your pastimes? Not only I can't understand it, they can't understand it. So they truly can't understand it, she can understand it. But she portrays herself as one who can't understand. So, lesson from Kunti. The Lord is so kind that he does not show special favor only to one who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of purpose. Very important in bhakti or in any spiritual path. The sankalpa, the intention, the purpose that you're trying to fulfill. In some cases, it's wanting to know the truth. I was at a home program last weekend, and someone in the audience was kind of new to Krishna consciousness. One of those, his wife was like enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness, and then before they were married, and now they're married, he's kind of, okay, I want to find out what Krishna consciousness is. And he's not, you know, rah-rah. He's not opposed either, he just wants to know. So that's a great qualification. Not accepting or rejecting because of rah-rah, or, you know, just being I'm going to be stuck in my position of being a philosopher, and I can't be convinced because I'm approaching the process by speculation. I'll never understand by the process of speculation. I'll never know. I'll never be convinced. Sometimes it's easier for women to accept Krishna consciousness, and a little more difficult for men because the rational faculty doesn't permit them to understand Krishna. But when men become convinced, because some bhakti awakens by association, little prasadam and some other things, then it's become good, strong devotees. But Krishna doesn't look at either your capacity as being a great philosopher or not. He looks at your purpose, even for the great philosopher. So here is her message. Again, this point of humility. The proper mentality required for approaching Krishna is humility. And reference is made to this very same point in Bhagavad Santarva. Jiva Goswami explains, why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead come to this world? He comes so the embodied souls may learn to fix their thoughts on his lotus feet, and most importantly, so the devotees may taste the happiness of devotional service. Krishna comes to awaken bhakti. He teaches the science, but he gives his association that it inspires bhakti, and for those that are already devotees, they're delighted. They're getting their heart's desire fulfilled. Three more verses. Text 21. Let me, therefore, offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudeva. Remember, that's her brother. The pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. So, let's start with this painting. This is Vasudeva bringing child Krishna to replace the child of Yashoda. So there's that one kind of affection, the affection of those that see Krishna with majesty, or a mix of majesty and intimacy. And then there's the residents of Vrindavan, and they see Krishna simply in this other way, with simply affection. Very nice. Same Krishna, but different relationship based upon how they regard him. This becomes important as we go along, you'll see. The connection between each verse and the next verse, that's why it took me 5 hours to go through it, but it's very, very sweet. She is highly learned, highly realized, and extremely humble. And she's disclosing the answer to these apparent contradictions that scholarly people, or those of us that are beginners in Krishna consciousness, can't understand it, because our bhakti isn't so strong. So, next verse, text 22. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Now, one of the commentaries makes the point, commentators, she doesn't start speaking about Krishna's feet, like when you have darshan of the deity, or to take darshan of the feet and moving upwards. She doesn't do that. She doesn't do that because she doesn't want to embarrass Krishna. She's speaking to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't like when Kunti is offering her praise. He sees her as his mother. But she sees him as the Supreme Lord. Another contradiction. A clash of rasa, or bhav, I should say. So she starts with his abdomen, then his garland on his chest, then his eyes, and then his feet, in that sequence. So the lotus image is repeated 4 times. Pankha in Sanskrit means mud. You know, mud's not glorious. But the lotus grows from mud. Therefore, it's pankaja, that which is generated from mud. But it's very, the imagery is very special. Prabhupada speaks of it this way. If we see a lotus flower, he's explaining this verse. If we see a lotus flower, we can immediately remember Krishna. Just like if you love your child, if you see any garment, a small ship, toys, any playthings, immediately remember your child. Oh, this is my child's shoes. This is my child's playthings. This is his garment. So, it is the custom of love. So when we hear the verse spoken by Kunti, she's using imagery of a lotus because it helps her remember Krishna. Here's the 4 lines, Prabhupada explaining them. Nama Pankaja Namaya, Krishna's navel is just like a lotus flower. From the navel of Krishna, there was a stem of lotus flower, and from that lotus flower, Brahma came out, and Brahma created this universe. This universe means so many planets, so many seas, mountains and cities, motor cars, everything. Within that lotus flower, the beginning is found. So there's Garbhadakshai Vishnu from his napa, from his navel, this lotus flower is generated, and then Lord Brahma, and then the universe, everything else. So she's honoring Krishna, who is the source of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who is the source of this lotus flower. Then, Nama Pankaja Maline, Prabhupada speaking. Here is a garden. There are so many flowers. Krishna is not so poor that simply by producing one lotus flower he's finished. No. There is a garland of lotus flowers. Big garland. As many lotus flowers as you want. That is God. So, Krishna likes lotus flower garlands. Here he's wearing one and holding another. Surrounding him, there's lotus flowers at his feet and in his hand, and lotuses everywhere. And here's Srimati Radharani offering nice garlands unto Krishna. Although there's no lotuses in the garlands apparently, but she likes offering garlands to Krishna. Nama Pankaja Netraya. This is the third line. Krishna's eyes are compared with the petals of a lotus flower. Same as in Brahma Samhita. That we pray to Krishna like this. Alola Chandrakala Sadhana Mahamithamshi. His eyes are like lotus petals. And nice imagery by ISKCON artists. When we see some scene, we may not see the eyes of Krishna behind the scene, but the eyes of Krishna behind the scene. Remember, one of the things I heard very early is a Krishna devotee. Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, would we see a beautiful sunset, like picture here, or we see a rose, is it okay to appreciate these things? And Prabhupada's answer was yes. And you should think, how wonderful is Krishna? My Krishna is so wonderful. He's created this wonderful sunset, this beautiful rose, with such a nice fragrance. You think, my wonderful Krishna. So seeing Krishna behind everything with devotion means then you can see Krishna. And then the last line, Namaste Pankajangraye, and Krishna's lotus feet are engraved with lotuses. Here's an image of Krishna's lotus feet. If you examine carefully, I took the time. There's one image that's in both of his feet, and that's the lotus. There and there. So these are the markings on the soles of Krishna's lotus feet. And there's Krishna's lotus feet. In Vishwanath's commentary, he writes, I am also counted among the fortunate, for you give happiness to my eyes. My eyes, receiving the sight of your navel, garland, eyes and feet, become pleasantly cool. Next to the last. Oh, Rishikesh, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released your mother, Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. So this comes now with the protection. Krishna is very kind and he gives protection. So Devaki is her sister-in-law, her brother's wife. Krishna protected Devaki. He released, literally, he released Devaki from prison. And the terrorizing that was going on by King Kamsa, her sister, excuse me, her brother. But Krishna also delivered the Pandava, the Kuntis, from a series of constant dangers. So in Prabhupada's commentary, he presents these series of constant dangers, mentioning when Duryodhana tried to feed Bhima poison cake, when Duryodhana tried to burn Anaconda was alive in a palace way in the back when the brothers had to face a man eating rakshasas like Hidimba. When they were cheated by the Kauravas in gambling and on numerous other occasions, Krishna protected them. Of course, Krishna orchestrated the difficulty, and then Krishna protected them. Now, comparing the two, our acharyas don't fail to make this comparison, with Devaki and Vasudeva, Krishna and Balaram, pictured here, they released Devaki and Vasudeva from prison after having killed Kamsa. Another painting of the same. So they were in danger, but Krishna protected them. And making a comparison, Kunti was more fortunate. Kunti was shown more favor than Krishna's own mother. And here's how. Kunti was shown far more favor because Lord Krishna did not save the other children of Devaki. The first eight children of Devaki were killed. Whereas he saved the children of Kunti. This was done because Devaki's husband, Vasudeva, was living, whereas Kunti was a widow. And there was none to help her except Krishna. The conclusion is that Krishna endows more favor to a devotee who is in greater dangers. So celebrate if you have greater dangers. You get more favor of Krishna. Sometimes he puts his devotees in such dangers because in that condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. The more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more success is there for the devotee. So, relish when you have dangers. Relish the protection that Krishna will extend to you, provided you intensify your attachment for him. Now, the last is basically a Mahabharata section. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poison cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. The emphasis here is Krishna's role in giving protection to his devotees. In this case, comparing herself to Devaki, she got special protection because of her helplessness and exclusive dependence upon Krishna. So in the verse, there's a number of Sanskrit terms that indicate how Krishna provided his protection. And again, this isn't the 5-hour version, this is a mini version, so I'm not going to go into each of the leelas. But Vishat indicates poison cake. So the poison cake episode was when Duryodhana and company had a plan to kill Bhima, that's Bhima. They fed him enough poison in cake to kill 100 men. They wanted to make sure he died. But he didn't die. He fell asleep and they tied him up and they rolled him into the river Ganges. The current of the Ganges carried him to the bottom regions where the Ganges flows. In the bottommost parts of the universe where the Navas live. And here he's having a battle with the Navas because the Navas bit him with a particular poison, was the exact antidote for the poison that was administered to Bhima. So he came out of his state of unconsciousness, saw the Navas, expanded his body, burst the rope that he had been tied up with, and had a battle with the Navas. And there's a long description of how he then returned even stronger, having been fed some of the Naga nectar. Long description. When Krishna protected Bhima and the Pandavas from the poison cake, from Maha Agne, great fire, the house of Lakh shown in the painting, another plan to burn the Pandavas alive, another plan of Duryodhana with conspiracy by others. But it was a failure because Krishna protected them. He protected them through the agency shown in the painting of Vidura, who told them of the plan, told them to dig a tunnel, told them when the fire was to be lit, told them to escape through the tunnel, and was waiting in the other end of the tunnel to take them on the other side of the river through the agency of Krishna's devotee. One may be protected. The devotee is acting as the agent of Krishna. And Purusha Ada, cannibal persons, a whole description, one there traveling undercover, incognito through the forest, they encountered Hidimba and Hidimbi, Rakshasa and Rakshasi, and Bhima had a big battle with Hidimba, and guess who won?
Bhima.
So Bhima, again, getting strength from Krishna, as Arjuna, as anyone gets strength from Krishna. He was, Pandavas were protected. And Asat Shampaya, the assembly of the vicious, Asat Shampaya, where Draupadi was to be stripped naked by the Kauravas, Dushasana here grabbing her sari, another nice painting of the same. And Krishna came and protected directly because of Draupadi's exclusive dependence upon Krishna. And Vana, Vasa, Krishkrita, this Krishkrita, we discussed this in the Bhagavatam verse, Krishtrina, remember that? Krishtrina means great suffering, great tribulation. So Krishkrita, the suffering was during Vana, Vasa, exile into the forest, you know, the Pandavas, after losing in the gambling match, were sent into exile. So, great tribulation, but tribulation after tribulation, Krishna protected them. And then, Maharata, Astrata, battle where great generals fought. This Maharata is a term that says that one can fight 1,000 warriors and defeat them. That's the qualification of Maharata. And there were so many generals that had that Maharata qualification. And one by one, Krishna protected them, just like here, this illustration is the Pandavas, before the, just as the Kurukshetra battle was to begin, all five of them, Krishna is also pictured here, coming before Bhima and offering their respects to Bhima. Excuse me, Bhishma.
Bhishma.
So, Bhishma is a Maharata for sure. But Krishna protected Arjuna from the arrows of Bhishma. The arrows of Bhishma were invincible, and yet Krishna protected Arjuna. Krishna had taken a vow, a long description. Krishna had taken a vow that he would not fight. But by Krishna's trickery, he made Bhima break his vow that with these five arrows tomorrow I'll kill the Pandavas. And Krishna tricked Bhishma that he wouldn't have the arrows. So he who never breaks his vow broke his vow by Krishna's trick. So Bhima took a vow. By the end of the day, I will kill Arjuna, or Krishna will break his vow. I'll make Krishna break his vow. So Bhishma fought so valiantly against Arjuna that Krishna placed himself in front of the arrows so that the arrows fired at Arjuna would hit him instead of Arjuna, to protect Arjuna. And then when what it seemed like all was lost, towards the end of the day, Arjuna's chariot broke down and Bhishma was ready to kill Arjuna, and Krishna picked up the chariot wheel and was charging at Grandfather Bhishma to smash Bhishma. He who promised he would not take a weapon took a weapon. The wheel of Arjuna's chariot. Here's a close-up of the same painting. Perspiration coming from Krishna's forehead, his body ashen by the dust raised by the hooves of the horses on the battlefield. Arjuna is trying to stop Krishna, valiantly. Grandfather Bhishma just drops his weapons. Krishna broke his promise. Because Krishna holds protecting of his devotee above his own promise. That's more important to Krishna than anything. His quality of bhakta vatsala supersedes everything. So Krishna protected Arjuna. And later, when Bhishma was invincible, they went to Bhishma and said, "What are we going to do to defeat you?" "Oh, you should have asked me. I can tell you who can defeat me." It was Krishna's idea. Just ask Bhishma, he'll tell you how you can defeat him. So, long narration, which I'm not going to go into because we don't have 5 hours. But for the wedding of one of his brothers, Grandfather Bhishma, went to the Swayamvara ceremony, the king of Kashi, and he kidnapped all three sisters, pictured in the painting here, Amba and Ambika and Ambalika. And without the long narration, Amba later became Sikandi in her next life. Sikandi, Bhishma said, "You put Sikandi in front of the army, I'll not fight." Because Sikandi, before Sikandi became a warrior, was a woman at birth. It's a long story. The original transgender situation. He became a man, or she became a man. I'm not going to fight against a woman. So Sikandi, pictured here on the right, was put directly against Bhishma in battle. Bhishma put his weapons down. He's not going to fight a woman. And as a result, Sikandi was able to pierce the armor of Bhishma, and Bhishma was killed. Krishna gave his protection. And then, we're almost done. Jayadrata, another great general that Krishna arranged the protection from. Now, there's a very nice painting, whole series of paintings. There's Jayadrata on his wedding chariot. He married the daughter of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had 100 sons and one daughter. And Dushala was his one daughter, and Jayadrata married her. On his wedding day, he's riding after the wedding with his newly married wife, and over in the field, he sees Draupadi. The man is so lusty, even on his wedding day, he became overwhelmed with the beauty and the features of Draupadi. And it didn't go away. It continued. And as it continued, he came back later and tried to abduct her, but Draupadi is not a weakling. She punched him right in the jaw, knocked him to the ground. But Jayadrata is a great warrior of some type, and he tied her up, tied her to his chariot, and abducted her. When the Pandavas found out, that Draupadi has been abducted, they immediately went charging after Jayadratha and they captured him. And Bhima was ready to finish him. It took Yudhisthira to spare him. Draupadi also. Draupadi's soft-hearted. He wanted to smash him. Instead, Yudhisthira made the decision that just humiliate him. Take your sword and cut off all of his hair except a few little patches of hair that you see in the painting. And he shall be just declared as a slave, the property of Yudhisthira. Jayadratha didn't like that at all. So Jayadratha went into the Himalayas and performed long austerity, trying to please Lord Shiva to get revenge against Yudhisthira and Pandavas. So Lord Shiva came and he offered two boons to Jayadratha. One of those boons was that he could defeat all the Pandavas except Arjuna. Arjuna and Shiva had a special, Shiva had some special appreciation for Arjuna, but that's a whole other long story. Many long stories within the long story. And the second benediction he gave was that anyone who made Jayadratha's head fall on the ground would have his own head broken into 7 pieces. So Jayadratha, his hair is grown in now. He did long austerities. He has this benediction from Lord Shiva. And he used this benediction, first of the two, during the Kurukshetra battle. So during the Kurukshetra battle, there was a situation where the son of Arjuna, one of Arjuna's sons, was named Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu became the husband of Uttara. Who was Uttara? Uttara's the daughter of Virata. So during the year of incognito, there is Arjuna dressed as a woman called the eunuch. And he was the dance teacher for King Virata's daughter, Uttara. So when Arjuna protected King Virata from the Kauravas that had come, it's a long story, from when the Kurus had come to abduct the cows of the king, Arjuna defeated them all. Then King Virata realized, you're not a dance teacher. You're Arjuna. And I would like to honor you by having my daughter become your wife. And Arjuna said, a teacher can't marry his daughter. But I have a son. And the son's name is Abhimanyu. And he's a marriageable age. I think it'd be a nice marriage. So Arjuna married Uttara. Abhimanyu married Uttara. There we go. So Abhimanyu, when the battle began, was this incredibly unstoppable, powerful fighter, son of Arjuna. And he was fighting with such intensity, the Kauravas had to do everything possible. So they made a plan. They had to conspire by unfair means to gang up on Abhimanyu, to stop Abhimanyu, because otherwise he'd destroy the entire army. So the plan was that 7 generals would attack Abhimanyu at the same time. It's against the codes of warfare. But they did it anyways because he was too powerful. And the plan was that while he was circled by different groups of warriors headed by 7 generals. He was fighting and fighting and fighting so ferociously. He picked up, when his weapons ran out, he picked up a chariot wheel and started bashing them with the chariot wheel. And they cut off his arms, and he was still fighting them without arms. He was such an intense fighter. Meanwhile, the Pandavas couldn't go in to rescue him because Jayadrath has this benediction from Lord Shiva that he could not be defeated by the Pandavas except for Arjuna. Abhimanyu was slain. And Arjuna took a very heavy vow by the end of the day that the next day during the battle, I will destroy Jayadrath or I'll enter into fire. And when the Kauravas heard that, they were fantastically happy. We just have to protect tomorrow one person, and Arjuna's dead, as he's going to enter into fire. So had a big party at night. Krishna asked Arjuna, why did you take such an impossible vow? And Arjuna said, I knew if I took this vow, you'd protect me. That's what I did. Jayadrath has to die. So, day 13 of the 18-day battle, there's the armies lined up. That's just one side of the armies, and the other side is over here. Huge array. And the whole plan from the Kaurava side is one thing: protect Jayadrath. Protect Jayadrath. Protect Jayadrath. So Arjuna had taken this terrible vow, and he attacked the Kaurava army with such viciousness, hundreds of arrows, the numbers of persons, 30,000 soldiers were killed in 1 hour by Arjuna alone. He was so intensely fighting, furiously fighting. Then the Kauravas sent Dronacharya. Whoops. There we go. Dronacharya to be a match against Arjuna. Arjuna realized he fought for some time, but I'm not going to. I have to stay focused on Jayadrath. So Krishna moved the chariot in such a way that he sped past Dronacharya and headed for Jayadrath. Then, in fact, you know this battle scene. So Drona, then, as Arjuna's chariot is being moved, he challenged with arrows. But then Arjuna defeated the arrows of Duryodhana. So that was unsuccessful. Now, Duryodhana's hand and fingers were pierced by the arrows of Arjuna. I don't want to mess with this guy. I want to go for Jayadrath. So, very intense scene. Arjuna is now approaching Jayadrath, and huge, intensely fierce army defending Jayadrath. So, in steps Bhima with his big club, and smashes and smashes and smashes and smashes and smashes, clearing the way for Arjuna to kill Jayadrath. And with a very special arrow, empowered by Lord Brahma, Arjuna shot one arrow that severed the head of Jayadrath from the rest of his body, and it sent the head flying through the air, landing in the lap of Jayadrath's father, who was off somewhere doing meditation peacefully. And when he saw the head of his son on his lap, he was shocked, and he pushed the head from his lap onto the ground, and his head cracked into 7 pieces. So the conclusion of this one is, wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, there's sure to be victory. Again, just embellishing Kunti's statement that Krishna protected them. But it's not over yet. After Jayadrath was killed, that was day 13, comes day 15, where Dronacharya, who previously during the battle with Jayadrath, the commander-in-chief of the entire Kuru army, was set up. This is after Grandfather Bhishma had been disposed. So Dronacharya, great hero, great warrior, the teacher of all the Pandavas, he had learned all the military skills from Parshurama. Very, very powerful. How to defeat Dronacharya? Krishna stepped in. Once again, Krishna gave the solution. Bhima, with his club, had killed an elephant. And he called out loudly, Ashwatthama, the elephant is dead. He didn't say Ashwatthama, the elephant. He said, Ashwatthama is dead. And Drona heard, Ashwatthama is dead. So he went to Yudhisthira to say, is it true? Ashwatthama is dead? Krishna said, tell me. Because Yudhisthira never tells a lie. So he said, yes, Ashwatthama is dead. Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And with that, the vitality of Drona was taken away. He just sat in meditation, dropped his weapons, was fixing his mind on the personality of Godhead. He was a devotee of sorts, mixed, but a devotee of sorts. And so it was arranged, long history behind this one too, that the son of Drupada, whose name was? Drishtadyumna. Drishtadyumna was destined to kill Drona. So Drishtadyumna at this time is the commander-in-chief of the Pandava army. Where are we? Oh, sorry. There. The commander-in-chief of the Pandava army. And Drishtadyumna took the opportunity to approach the place where Dronacharya was sitting, and he beheaded him. So Dronacharya is finished. And then comes, who's that? Karna, day 18. We're almost done, it's 18, day 17. Karna, we heard a little bit about Karna, the first son of Kunti, was very, very, very powerful warrior. So Krishna instructed Arjuna how to defeat him. What happened was the wheel of Karna's chariot got stuck because the field was so bloody by mud that the earth became soft and muddy. So his wheel got stuck in the mud, so he got down from his chariot, he was trying to unstick the wheel, and Krishna said to Arjuna, kill him. And Karna protested, what kind of personality are you? You know this is against the principles of Dharma. And Krishna's reply, when it suits you, you adamantly oppose an unjust act against yourself or against your friends, but you do not speak up against the injustice of others, Where was your sense of justice when the Pandavas were cheated out of their kingdom, or when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly by her hair, or when six warriors surrounded Abhimanyu and cut him down? No, my friend, you will be treated the way you have allowed others to be treated. The giver of karma. As you sow, so you shall be. So he instructed Arjuna, release the arrow. And Arjuna released this very special weapon, Anjalika weapon, and Duryodhana was killed. And as you see in the painting, he went back to his father, the son of God. Then the final day, when Karna, the dear friend of Duryodhana, was killed, he lamented so terribly, he was unconsolable. Now was the time for Bhima to fight with Duryodhana, final day. Now, Duryodhana had this painting, this is a painting of Duryodhana seated by Krishna's head, where he chose Krishna's armies, where Arjuna was at Krishna's feet, he just chose Krishna. Oh, Krishna, you come to my side. But Krishna said, I will fight. There's my armies and there's me. Duryodhana wanted his armies. And Krishna wanted, Arjuna wanted Krishna. So, big battle between Duryodhana and Bhima, very, very skilled in fighting with the club. There's the Pandavas and Krishna. Looks like Balaram sitting there with the plow also, observing the battle, and neither could defeat either one. So Krishna gave him a hint how to defeat him. He tapped his thigh, because it was arranged again by Krishna that Duryodhana's body, which had become invincible except that part of his body was covered by his gumsha, when Gandharva, Gandharva removed the cloth and saw the body of her naked son, except where his private parts were covered, arranged by Krishna. So that part was vulnerable. Otherwise, the austerities of Gandhari had protected her son. So, big, big battle, and finally, Duryodhana was maimed beyond his capacity to move, and eventually died in that condition. Following the destruction of Duryodhana came the final event. This is almost the final slide. Where the astra weapon of Ashwatthama was sent to kill the son of the child in the womb of Uttara. Well, this is the final act of protection that Krishna showed, that's spoken of by Kunti. So, the end slide here is Rake Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rake. He whom Krishna protects, no one can kill, but if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can give him protection. So, summary, many great misfortunes befell the Pandavas, but in all circumstances they simply depended on Krishna, who always saved them. That's Prabhupada's words. Okay, so I've taken too much time, but that's summary of the first seven verses of Kunti's prayers. Then we'll continue from text 25. And I'll go a little more slowly. Probably just cover a few verses this evening. Any discussion? Sitting here for so long. 2 hours. Yes?
At a point, we were discussing Mahamaya and Yogamaya.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, well, they're both different, but do they have the same functionality? And how do we regard that?
Mahamaya is the expansion of Yogamaya. The external potency is an expansion of the internal potency. noticing. Both the similarities, both are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. One is the expansion of the other. Their function is different. The deluding potency deludes those who are averse to Krishna. The Yogamaya potency assists Krishna in his pastimes. For the pastimes of material creation, that of giving living entities the opportunity to try to enjoy separately from Krishna, that's Mahamaya's function. Yogamaya's function, those who wish to be in a relationship with Krishna, she assists them. And in different ways, she assists Krishna's pastimes, including for the residents of Vrindavan, covering the residents of Vrindavan from understanding that Krishna is God, so that the intimacy of the relationship can increase unlimitedly. This is a function of Yogamaya. The Mahamaya is for the material creation, Yogamaya is for the spiritual creation, for the spiritual realm. Yogamaya can extend herself into this realm for service to Krishna and guides the activities of the devotees. That's the Yogamaya feature. The Mahamaya feature covers.
Yeah.